Welcome back, everybody, to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan here, as always, but never again, with Producer Mike. Hello, Producer Mike.
Cat's out of the bag already, huh? Hi, J.L.
Totally out of the bag!
The Insider, folks. 1999 Best Picture nominee, Al Pacino, Oscar nominee for supporting actor in that movie. That's what I was quoting. Yes, I figured up top. It's inauguration day as we record this, and it's such an incredible day of symbolism. Donald Trump, shockingly back in office,
yeah,
delivering a slow, boring, yet menacing speech. We called it, me and my friend Rod on the Karen Hunter show earlier today, came together. I said, it's like the Klan Juneteenth. And he said, Klanteenth. And I said, that is perfect. It's Klanteenth. This is what this is. This is a rejoicing of white people getting to see decent people upset.
Yeah.
That's what this holiday is about, because I stand by my true belief in the MAGA movement. You'll see, today is supposed to be their celebration. Their Lord and Savior has risen.
Same day as MLK Day.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe the last one ever.
What a great way to overshadow a great black man than to have the worst white man rise from the dead. This is as close as we may get in our lifetimes to the resurrection of Christ, except it's the opposite.
Well, he said in his speech, right, that he was saved by the bullet,
yeah,
missing, so he could saved by God, so he can come in and be president again.
And to be honest, God really may have wanted to kill that MAGA firefighter.
Yeah, right.
Like, if God is a just God, he might have been like, you cheat on your wife in the firehouse, you're generally a racist piece of shit.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Gotta go. Yeah.
So, but maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe not. Might have been all coincidence.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The Lord works in mysterious ways, but with Trump, he works in really shitty ways. Mm-hmm. And so today, Trump rises from the ashes like a stripper from Phoenix. And this podcast is now recording its last episode, not because of Trump. He hasn't canceled us. Although, should we edit? Should we spin this as Trump is
shut
canceling
us down?
The show? Correction, everybody. Donald Trump has shut this show down.
Yeah. Saw a dictator for a day and he said, done.
Yeah. He You're just done. Said, everything this guy does is done. To which my 9 paying fans were like, what? But this show is ending, and it's ending for a good reason. Because Mike, producer Mike, as they know you,
mm-hmm,
I'm going behind, you know, behind the wall. Mike.
First name producer, last name Mike.
It's a foreign name. I think it's Eastern European. Yeah. Mike is spelled M-I-J-K. Producer is actually spelled P-G-H-U-X-X-L-Y.
There's a W in there.
But because Mike is now going to a job, a full-time job with a big entity that will employ his skills as a producer and pay him and give him things that I can't, which is making him go home late on Mondays, basically. That's basically what I've brought to Mike's life over the last year and a half. I've ruined Mondays.
That's not true. It's been a very fun ride, obviously. When we started this venture, it was a different time in podcasting. I think we both, you know, the deal that we had in place, in my mind, I was like, well, we'll be making money off of this thing in no time.
Yeah.
And then it just didn't really work out. But
I could have told you, with me involved, it was not. I kind of kept that close to the vest that it wasn't going to work.
I want to say, involved, though, I do think in the time that I've known you, I am one of the few people that has really attempted to work with you and also try to make you feel like the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
Whereas,
And you won't make that mistake again. That I can tell you.
Well, but actually, that's not true, because
But I before you get sentimental, go ahead, not that you will, but what I would like to say is two things, somewhat jokey but somewhat serious. I hate most people that I encounter in this world.
Yeah.
Let alone this business. The higher percentage within the business.
Yes, of course.
I think we're a stupid, selfish, ignorant society, and we're getting worse day by day. I think this podcast has certainly stood for that.
Yeah.
And I have been begging my fans, my friends, anybody who will fucking listen, like I'm a psychopath screaming about the Lord in Times Square, just give me a chance. I got the talent, I got the skills, I got the knowledge. I can do something. I can really be somebody. And I got lucky in 2020. The algorithm, you know, pissed on me and said, you are anointed for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I gained a lot of fans who sort of, I didn't appreciate the fact that they were new consumers of comedy, which meant people in search of a distraction, not fans of art, not fans of my work. I hate giving this caveat. Of course, I'm not talking to people who are. I'm just saying I have an incredibly low percentage of quality fans. And by quality fans, I just mean fans. I have many followers, very few fans. And kind of like right, like Republicans and Jesus. A lot of them follow him.
Right.
Most of them don't really like what he does.
Yes.
And you, and I've known you for a while, but you validate, like you took me on to make this show. I reached out to you and I was like willing to like, can I pay you for studio time? And you said, like, why don't we do a deal?
Yeah.
Because, and that was enough validation for me to say, hey, this guy, Mike, for everybody, Mike has given me who knows how many thousands of dollars of work. In terms of his man hours and his skills. And I have enough confidence in myself that I believed that I was worth it because it would pay off, because I know what I'm doing is good. And I am thankful, first on a show level, you know, the feedback was universal that Mike, you took my skills and you just shaped them. You added that coaching, that producing, as much as like every ninth show I would leave here either depressed or in a huff, because I was like, well, after 7 o'clock, why do you fucking become a dick? But the overwhelming result was a show that I am insanely proud of and happy with, and that I wish I could have made this the centerpiece of my comedy career. But for every imaginable reason, except your producing skills, it didn't work out. Like the fans seem to arbitrarily return to the show. Like, in other words, I would hope we had a great episode. Look at that. Viewers went up. Listeners went up.
Let's hope
they stay.
Right.
And then they would. Some would. And then some wouldn't. And it, you know, algorithms are not my friend. They haven't been my friend since 2021.
Yeah.
My fans seem to enjoy passively consuming my stuff when it comes across their desk. But they, no matter, and I really believe you helped me make an excellent show. Like, whatever people like about my intellect or my humor, I feel like you helped craft this into a perfect, fairly non-mopey vehicle for what I do. Yeah. And it's a testament, like, and I joked with you before the show, basically what this feels like is as if somebody listened to our show and was like, this is good stuff. Well, what do you like about it? The comedian? No. The social commentary? No. The politics? Absolutely not. The personality? No, he's pretty off-putting. What do you like about it? Video and sound. Oh, okay. Well, I know exactly how you can extract those minerals from this earth that is JL. You just dig in there and you get your Coscarelli elements out and you're left with a big steaming pile of undevelopable land.
Oh my God.
So I'm very frustrated because I am happy for you. I'm happy that someone affiliated with me gets to succeed. You know, I'm at this point content to be Charles Dutton and Rudy. Like, I'm still a janitor, but you did it.
Yeah.
And but it's disheartening to me, not because you're leaving. And not because in a year and a half we didn't create the fucking Joe Rogan experience. It was like, Mike, you can't leave. We have 9 million listeners. Who's going to do better than that?
Right.
It's that it never really, it never really took off, even within my own parameters of what taking off would constitute. So in a way, I'm glad my fans never truly gave this show a fighting chance. Like, it was never, this isn't a show where it's like you're sitting at home going, I know this is a bear, but I feel like JL's show, we're up to like 15,000 listeners. Like there's real, I mean, with Trump coming back.
15,000 listeners, we would have still been in business, baby.
Do you hear that? 86,000 YouTube subscribers, 200,000 followers on social media. Of course you don't.
I wouldn't have gone to iHeartMedia begging for a full-time job.
Right. Right. So what I like, but it is rare in this business. I have been used by a lot of people. And somebody could argue I'm currently being used by someone in my comedy career. Don't say it.
I'm not going to say anything. But, it's just, you know, not a lot of dots to connect.
Yeah. But I have found that I have like that in my career, I've been used at times when I had connections or clout. I have found everyone from friends to strangers to coworkers, like when I had heat, they really wanted to be involved as if the week before I wasn't funny or the month after I wasn't still doing good work. And you are one of the very few people in this business ever who has taken a chance on me and given me great work and great partnership in making something I'm very proud of. And don't ever make that mistake again is the lesson. And I hope you learned it, Mike. I hope you learned it. Instead of undercover boss, this is like undercover fuck up. It's like, it was JL the whole time. No, you were never going to succeed. No.
Listen, hold on. All right. Do I get a chance now?
Sure.
Okay. So first off, I appreciate everything that you have just said. That does mean a lot to me. And I want to say first off that I would have never done the show if I didn't have fun doing it. If I didn't completely believe in you and think of you as a friend, a good friend. All of those factors are obviously important to me. And I mean, the lesson I think I've learned throughout this experience of, you know, folks listening, it's not just JL's show that like we couldn't really get to the heights we needed to sort of not have to go get a day job. It's everything. Like my studio, it's done. We couldn't make any money.
It's now being used for OnlyFans content.
I mean, we started this thing at the absolute worst time. And that's the thing that kind of sucks about it. Cause I do think if we had started this maybe 4 years ago, we would have been in a position where we could have done something where people would just go, wow, those guys are working on something really interesting. Cause I do think, you know,
well, 4 years the ago, best we, moments, this would have been the home for making podcasts great again.
That's true.
But I lost a 50-50 vote on whether to stay with Mike Coscarelli.
But you lost a 50-50 vote. I would just say that, like, I do think that in this case particularly, I know how you tend to feel about projects that you've worked on. I do think we are really victims of the time, unfortunately.
Survivors, Mike. I'm not a victim. I'm a survivor.
A survivor of the time. Yeah. Thank you. Seriously. But
I'm a survivor, not going to succeed. My career's over. Good luck, Mike. Anyway, sorry.
So the thing that I want to drive home to the listeners is also that, you know, the current job that I'm about to take, JL and I have discussed this a little bit, but, you know, off mic and off camera. But I'm basically not allowed to work on other podcasts or, you know, storytelling properties is what the, you know, the in quotes it is. Audio storytelling projects. So obviously
ASTP, it's in standard industry jargon.
That's right. This is not the last time that you and I are going to be working together on stuff. We already have something in, you know, on yep. potentially on the books for the summer.
And my lawyer is actually going to reach out to you that when I go on my killing spree, the documentary rights are solely yours.
That's going to be great.
Okay. See? Okay.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
That'll be fun to dig into. But I mean, this isn't the end of us working together. It's probably, let's be honest, it's probably not even going to be the end of stuff on your YouTube channel. Yeah. It's just, you know, we're taking kind of a collective step back as partners, and we're going to rework some stuff, and
we're going to co-parent Rain on Your Parade. We love it equally. It is not the show's fault, but we're just going to, you know, handle it in our separate spaces.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is more stuff that'll be coming, you know, from both of our collective minds. And but, dude, this has been a ton of fun. And obviously, you know, I wouldn't have taken the project on if I didn't enjoy it. And if I didn't have fun working with you, I mean, I had fun working with you. This is how this started from when I was working with you and Jay on Making Podcasts Great Again. You know, like I would go to your apartment every week and, you know,
Cookie would get up all in your crotch.
Yeah.
And we'd have fun and most of the jokes would be understood. And
yeah. And honestly, like that, you know, that's how our relationship developed because you know, I feel like a lot of times Jay would leave and you and I and a lot of times Laura would just be like hanging out, talking about life and talking about stuff. And that's how the friendship developed. So, I mean, you know, obviously I still have high hopes for your talent and your abilities. I don't have high hopes for our industry, yeah. which we share. And I think that that's sort of like the bummer about all this, because I do think, again, different time, different place, we would have been able to really hit this out of the park in terms of just being able to capture a bigger audience. But I just think this is sort of a symptom of a bigger problem that we're dealing with. And we're just going to have to, you know, pivot into some other stuff that, you know, we'll be passionate about, but we can do for free.
Yeah, and I'm about to pivot.
I just can't do this anymore.
I'm about to pivot to Indeed.com. So
for another producer or for another career.
And people
path?
Have talked about a producer, and I was talking to my friend Pete Dominic the other day, and he was he's you know, he is a genuine fan of the show.
Of this show?
He's a busy guy, but he really got into it and has really enjoyed the show. And he was like, well, you should get, you know, you shouldn't quit. You should get a new producer. Like when you're, and I'm like, but the problem is, it's like I like the dynamic and yeah. I like your work. And it's like what I'm, and here, sorry, everybody, there's about to be a slight money thing brought up. But I'm going to continue doing my Patreon stuff where I podcast like once a week there and post like book reviews and stuff. Now, obviously, if anybody wants to still hear my takes in the next couple of weeks and is missing Rain on Your Parade, it's $3 a month.
Yeah, ain't much.
I'm just waiting for them all to click off in disgust. But it's not really a lot, which I like to set a price point low to then, you know, it's almost like me going to a dominatrix and saying, like, step on my nuts and spit in my mouth. Like when you set a price point low and your fans still don't join, you're like, yes. Oh, now tell me I'm worthless. Yes. Oh God. Tell me I'm a piece of shit. 50 cents. Oh, no new subscribers. Oh. Just, you'll see me in my fucking office at home, choking myself with a lemon in my mouth, going like, he lost subscribers when he lowered the price. Oh, David Carradine. Oh. Anyway, but I recommend you go check out. There's a lot of different stuff on the Patreon, and I'm pretty consistent with it. And then the people who do join seem to like the stuff. So that's always there. And then I do have, sorry, I have a show coming up in New York, February 6th.
Who are you 6th. Apologizing to?
My fans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. They, I mean,
because you're expecting them to potentially spend some money.
Yeah, I mean, no. February 6th. It's a live Making Podcast Great Again at Stand Up New York in Times Square, Bond 45. You know, it'll be a good show. If you don't go, that's fine. They'll probably cancel it. February 28th. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina, and then the end of March, I'm in Vegas. So check out my website if you're near any of those things. Come on through. But over the last couple of weeks, I emailed a lot of the clubs and places I've either worked or I'm trying to work and didn't get any responses. So it's one of those things where people love saying you can't quit, you got to keep going. And I go, I really don't at this point. Like, I never thought, like, there have been moments in my life, Mike, where I have felt like bad moments where I have felt like an out of body bad, where I'm almost like, it's like you're like whatever the opposite of like, oh, I just hooked up with this beautiful woman, or I just had my first kiss, or like these moments where you're like, my brain is overloaded with like good vibes that I'm kind of like out of it. I've had a few moments, bad moments like that too. Cheated on my college girlfriend on spring break. That was like a moment of like, oh my fucking God, what did I do? Mm-hmm. There have been a few moments like that in my life. And today, watching the inauguration, seeing my Trump special launch, inauguration is my favorite N-word on YouTube now. As you hear this, it's really funny. Seeing that get off to a very poor launch, and that's the algorithm is all about. It's like the first 48, both in videos and finding missing people.
Yeah.
It's crucial. The first 48 that matters.
Yeah.
And once it's gone from that, unless you get some boost, unless Rogan shares it on his show, it's not, it's going to die a slow, painful death.
Yeah.
And just seeing that, knowing that this show is ending, knowing that Trump is in office, knowing I have really no new gigs on the horizon, I felt that even though it's not quote unquote my fault, none of it really, I felt like dejected and just kind of like that negative, like delirium where I'm like, what am I doing? The only fault I could find is like, what am I doing this? Why not this? But like, why am I doing any of these entertainment pursuits? And the punchdown of the week is going to be an epic. So we might just do a break here. This is kind of like a wrap up episode. I think the title should just be Producer Mike. feel free to put a montage of photos for yourself.
I'm not working that hard on this episode.
But it's, I just think we could talk about Trump, but I've done that. And you can hear me talk about it in videos and on the Patreon if you want. I think we're at a place in this country where the pain of liberals is all that the anger of people who don't like Trump is the life force of the MAGA movement.
Yeah.
It's not policy. It's not protecting the border or stopping trans athletes. It's seeing liberals get mad.
Yeah.
And that is no way to run a country.
Yeah.
Schadenfreude is not a good rare. Schadenfreude is not a good way to run a country. Yeah. And that's exactly what we're doing. So there's really nothing left for me to say on Trump. And then the show ending is bittersweet because I'm very proud of what we've done. But I just had this kind of general feeling today of like, wow, this sucks. That's like my general, and it's like the only way I can compare it. It's not that any one thing made me feel that way, but it was a combination of all these different things today that made me just go, ugh.
Yeah, dude. I know I feel it. For me, we talked about this before we got on the mic, but like even just seeing this TikTok ban that was immediately reversed and was basically just like used as a propaganda play for how, oh, Trump saved TikTok. Oh, Donald Trump saved TikTok.
Give Reagan credit. When he pulled this, it was for fucking hostages in Iran.
Yeah, right.
Like something right. Trump's Iran hostage crisis is TikTok.
Yeah.
We're done. That's it. We're done.
Yeah. And I mean that it is just this feeling and I guess it's been probably about a week or so since we recorded. But when Zuckerberg did Rogan's podcast and like, we're getting rid of all of our censorship.
We have to be more manly. We're not manly enough anymore. Oh, yes. Mandroid. Tell us about being a man.
Yeah, dude. And there is just a general feeling that I have that. I kind of hate that just sort of feels like it's going to be making things now is going to be doing this in perpetuity forever. That it's just going to be another 40 years of my life of cutting people's social media clips. And there's got to be some sort of breaking point with this algorithm. I don't know how this can be the way people watch and consume media for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Unless I die like tomorrow or something. Like I can't understand it.
And dude, I will Michael Jackson, your Farrah Fawcett if you die tomorrow.
We should just Thelma and Louise it together and just go right off the Williamsburg Bridge. But I think that's the thing that's getting to me. And I feel like it's a version of what's getting to you too. It's just like, you know, feeling like you're doing good work, spending a lot of time on it. And with these clips, man, that's the major thing is just, you know, for some of those other clients that I've had having like cut things that are 90 seconds, you spend a ton of time on it. Like I'm sitting there with bloodshot eyes in front of a computer because I've just been staring and making cuts on videos all day. And then to know that they're basically just going into the garbage can of the internet. Where, you know, we've talked in the past, I'm such a fan of classic films or you know, classic music or whatever. And those things have a shelf life where they a long shelf life. You can go back to them. You can go back to some of these classic films and just be like, wow, what a work of art. That, you know, look at what's going on here. Look at this acting performance. What a great script. There's a million reasons that you can like dissect film, and people do it.
Right.
Is that going to be, I mean, are people going to go back and dissect, you know, the Call Her Daddy podcast? And I'm not even throwing shade. I'm just saying, like, at some point, none of this stuff is going to have any lasting influence. And that is depressing. So it's just, is our lives as entertainers and our lives as producers of content and, you know, is our life just a never ending, you know, hamster wheel of just putting out nonsense that no one's going to see and just having our feelings hurt over and over that, well, you know, if it's not on Barstool, then it doesn't really matter. And you're just like, huh? What am I doing this for? You know?
Well, yeah, that is how I feel, I think. And you just see, like, that's why I think I should just write books. Because I feel like that's like my audience, in not just readers are my audience. Like, I, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not even about genre. I feel like society is quickly becoming, you know, readers and non-readers, I think, are a good dividing line maybe for where I should target myself.
Yeah.
But the idea of like you said, the content machine, you know, every time I open up Facebook, I have like arm wrestling clips for some reason. This Canadian arm wrestling guy.
Okay.
Huh?
I said Kay.
Yeah. All right. He's Darren Levette or Levert. Like just it's videos of him. And then it's this podcast Pillow Talk.
Yeah.
Where I've seen it's that. Just yeah. clips of porn stars getting interviewed. And I'm like, I really don't want to see this stuff.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't count as me being interested because I see like a flash of a woman with huge tits sitting in a chair and it's like cock size. And it's, I'm not interested, but I'm like, what? And then they're like, got him.
Yeah.
Got
I know. Him. And now your YouTube algorithm is just, I'm just is
like,
a mess.
What is this? Yeah. You're like, you show me a car crash.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, oh, what? Oh, he must be into car crashes. No, you just show me a thing that like gets me visually.
Yes.
I'm not interested. And that's now what I get. And it's like, I know people are like, no, Jay, if you see the porn stuff, it's like, no, don't get me wrong. It's not like I haven't clicked on 10 or 20,000 pictures of busty women on the internet. It's that I don't want to anymore. You're ruining everything, internet. And I'm trying to do something like, I don't know, a little, not unique in terms of like, oh, a podcast, but like somehow share my mildly unique perspective or thoughts on things. And it can't break through. I don't see the things I want to see either.
Right.
But I know enough. I'm old school enough and respectful of things enough to go, well, what's so-and-so doing? If they're not showing me, I know who I'm a fan of. I don't, maybe it's being in this space that lets me more hyper aware of it where I'm like, yeah, well, I want people to look up my stuff. Why aren't I looking up people's stuff?
Yes.
I should look up people's stuff if the algorithm is not showing me. But we are slaves to the algorithm and we are slaves to our set, like to our base selfish desires. Now that is how we've been conditioned. And it's a tough thing to be in a business where I feel like I'm putting out good things, but you're still asking for people to take a step towards you.
But this is the weird thing. And this is the other aspect of this that I'm struggling with. Is it a business anymore? Is it like,
well, it's not art.
Like I got into show business. I thought I got into show business and media. And now I'm in, what is it? Nobody's making money off of any of this.
You
stuff.
Are in the Powerball attention sweepstakes.
Yeah, dude, because this is the thing. And this,
if you get it, you can make a lot of money. It's not show, that's what I'm going to call it. The Powerball attention sweepstakes. That's what we're in.
It just becomes this thing where there's this, it's almost this like dirty little secret. That everybody that I meet, with the exception of like Hannah Burner, like a handful of people that I know, aren't making money. like they just like keep pumping this out, and they're also living sort of like hand to mouth, trying to like stitch things together.
Better than living ass to mouth. I'm sorry, it's true. The pillow talk clips I keep seeing.
That's right.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's not your fault.
See, it's already in here. Yeah. It's already in here, Nikki Benz.
But this is why it's so weird now, because like when I started this whole thing, and part of the reason that in my mind I was like, I felt like working with you and all the other people that I was working with was sort of a safe bet to kind of front load my free work to just be like, I'll just work on it. It's going to pay off because we just have to hit this benchmark, this benchmark, this benchmark, and we can do it. Like, we'll be able to do it because I, you know, all the things that I was sort of taught in the past that worked to kind of build an audience, which worked, you know, I have many success stories under my belt, but there's just like things just changed. And all of a sudden it was like,
the unstoppable producer met the immovable podcaster. Yeah.
Trust me. It's not like any particular person's fault. It's just that like, it's just that, you know, honestly, man, like to be candid with you and the audience, like I started signing people up to kind of like launch a network here. And I was doing it based off of like old information that I had that had been working up to that point. And sort of post pandemic, you know, I started taking calls with some of the like the business people that I knew, the people that would sell and that had their, they were sort of like my go-between between sponsors and the talent and production and all that. And literally it's like, I think I had already talked to you and we were going to start your thing. And there were like a couple other shows that we were working with. And then I had a call with them and they were just like, they're like, yeah, you're going to need to get like 10 to 15,000 downloads a week to like pull sponsors in. I was like, huh, that number seems high. That wasn't the number that I thought we needed.
Right.
Because back in, you know, I can't believe I've lived long enough to say this, but back in the day and with podcasting, you didn't need that number. You needed like half that.
Have you seen Gung Ho with Michael Keaton?
I don't know that I've seen it all the way through, but I know the movie where
he's my favorite scene. It's the Japanese are taking over the factory.
Yeah.
It's basically like they need to meet benchmarks or they'll be taken over, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's a mockery of like Japanese. They're like weird, anal retentive, but they're really good workers. And Americans are like have spirit, but are lazy pieces of shit.
Yeah.
And they're in the factory.
It's Ron Howard, isn't it?
I think it is Ron Howard. And Michael Keaton's the main character. And he's walking around because Clint Howard is the guy who goes, how many cars do we have to do a month? And he's walking around going, they say we can't do it. Like he's doing his speech and they're like, Keaton thing. I think we can. And they're like, yeah. And then the guy goes, how many cars do you have to get? And everybody's riding him, goes, 15,000 cars. And the room goes silent. And he leans back in like they didn't hear. And he goes, 15,000 cars. And they're all like, what? We can't do that. And Kaparzow. That's Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan. Sorry. Uh-huh. That's when you said 50. I could just imagine going, how many downloads?
Yeah.
15,000 downloads.
I was like, did I hear that wrong? And it was literally just like, and I was like, oh, we'll do it anyway. Like we're just going to be too good to be denied. Like I was very, I really, really had spirit when we were starting this up. I thought like, you know, benchmarks be damned, you know, free labor be damned. But it turns out, you know, almost 2 years of it, you really start to get tired. And, you know, it just became this thing, man, where it's just, everybody that I talked to, people that were, you know, in 2017, if you would have known somebody that had 500,000 Instagram followers, you would have thought this is a sure thing.
Right.
Like I can teach somebody how to do a show. I can teach somebody how to talk on the microphone. We just structure these things, right? We hit a fucking home run and we're in the money. And it just changed and it has changed. And now it just seems like they have basically, listen, there are some like TikTok creators who literally do 50 videos a day and end up making, you know, 20 grand a month. Like they do exist.
Yeah.
But primarily it just seems like they have tricked everybody into just supplying them. It'd be like if NBC, instead of like taking their time to, you know, deliberate over whether or not Seinfeld had legs to to last for X amount. It's like if NBC was just like, instead of being precious over what we're going to make and put on our airwaves, we're just going to invite anybody in the world to just make stuff. We'll give them an hour on the day. Like yeah. You get Monday at 9, you get Tuesday at 7, you get, you know, Wednesday at 6, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I got you.
And they just opened it up and they were just like, but we're not going to produce any of it. You just give it to us and we'll just put it on our airwaves. And then if there's any money, you'll get paid. And if not, well, we'll just sell all your fucking data and that's how we'll make our money.
Yeah.
They've just, it's like a perfect con that has also at the same time, it's ruined the entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so, it has uplifted themselves into being the only consumer base for entertainment that has any influence.
Yeah.
Rendering everything worthless, you know?
And then AI showed up.
Yeah, right.
Like, to be continued. How bad can it get?
It's just a mushroom cloud.
Who's that at the door? It's AI. And I want to actually, before we take a break, I wanted to say my thanks and be mad at my fans. Because like you said, the amount of work you did that they enjoyed and that I couldn't be, you know, I don't even know what the point of me having 86,000 subscribers on YouTube is. Like, I just put out a Trump special today, inauguration. Yeah. I'm thinking, I mean, that's got to be pretty good for the algorithm. My channel, inauguration,
yeah, Trump. Yeah.
Special, stand-up special, all the buzzwords.
Right.
It's doing shit right now.
I'm sorry. And,
no, it's okay. It's like I kind of was just hoping it wouldn't, but I was like, it'll do shit.
Yeah.
Like, I saw a guy, and I'm going to talk about it in the comedy talk, but I watched a guy's special. I saw him. I did a show with him Wednesday. He was just a spot at the Comedy Village, and it was a really funny set. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go watch his special. So his special had like 29,000 views, and it was very good. He has 633 subscribers on YouTube. I was like, wow, that's a good ratio. I have 86,000 subscribers on YouTube. I'll be lucky if this thing gets 10,000. And it's exactly why people follow me, the Trump shit.
Right.
So you start to go, well, now I really don't have a fucking clue.
Yeah.
Like literally, it's like, I have 86,000 people who subscribe to me. You want to go beyond that because you want to grow.
Yeah.
I've done all the buzzy things and it's like, first 5 hours, 2,900 hits. Oh boy, this is going to tank like a motherfucker. This is my monkey man, a better man, the Robbie Williams biopic, which by the way, two things I wanted to bring up to you.
Yep.
I saw it.
Yeah, you told me.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Did we do it on the show?
I can't remember, but you told me. You said you liked it.
Oh, I did. Yes, no, that was in text.
Yeah.
I did like it. And here's what I'm going to say. And this is a good way to wrap this up. Why shouldn't our main body of the last episode be about a movie about a monkey,
CGI monkey?
A CGI monkey. But two movies in particular stood out to me, not as my favorite movies, but two movies stood out to me this year. One is on Netflix, Emilio Perez.
Yeah.
And a better man, the Robbie Williams monkey biopic.
Such a dumb idea.
But here's what I'm going to say. Those two movies on paper seem really dumb to me. And they were both, but they both were original and they were both really kept my attention. And like I watched both movies and at the end of them, I was like, I really like, I enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's the great, but I'm like, I enjoyed that. I went to a movie for 2 hours and left going, that was fun. That was interesting. Like I was attentive. I'm not saying it's the greatest movie I ever saw, but I get like thumbs up to both of those movies. A musical about a Mexican drug lord getting gender reassignment surgery, and a movie about a pop singer who doesn't really matter that much in America being portrayed as a monkey for his life. What? And what's so crazy is it's like we in this country sort of go, we want attention. Like you got to get their attention. It's got to be. But don't make it too artsy or good. We want it to be bullshit that gets our attention. And I just thought both movies have like well, Emilio Perez has gotten a lot of praise, but Monkey Man, I'm just calling it Monkey Man, even though that's a different movie.
Yep.
A better man is like enjoyable. Like, I really just kind of sat there with my popcorn and was like, I really liked that. Was it perfect? No, but I really did enjoy my time with that movie.
Yeah.
And it makes you, it just makes you realize, like, don't try to make art.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, that's true.
Like, like,
unless you're prepared for nobody to see it.
Right.
And if you are, then that's fine. But,
and I remember when I saw the movie The Last Duel with
Matt Damon
and Adam Driver. And my friend Chris told me to see it in the theater. He says, I think you'd like it. So this was like 2021.
Yeah.
I went to see it. There was like one other dude in the theater, and it was like a random Tuesday. But it was its first week. Like, it was just after its first week, and it made no money. And I saw it, and I was like, that movie was fucking awesome.
Was it good? I never saw it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. It was what you really would expect from Ridley Scott, Matt Damon, Adam Driver, and the woman's name, Jodie Comer.
And Affleck's in it too, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. And Affleck was so good that, like, it took me like his second scene till I was like, oh, fuck, that's Affleck. Yes.
Yeah.
And if you give me that cast and that director and tell me this movie's and good reviews, oh, this shit's going to flop.
Yeah.
No. Flop.
Yeah, big time.
And Ridley Scott was pissed. And I could see people even on my timeline that I'm friendly with going like, dude, make more movies people want to see and maybe you won't have flops. And then they watch it on HBO Max a year later and they're like, this movie was fucking good. And I'm like, yes, he made a good movie that you liked. Yeah, yeah. But we're now conditioned to this like bullshit. You know, it's, and I'm sorry if it, you get me rambling, but.
Well, people also just don't go to the movies anymore. I think
Wicked, Sonic the Hedgehog, Lion, no, Mufasa.
But that's not what I mean. I mean, like,
they don't go to cinema.
No, not even that. I just think that when I was a kid and when you were a young adult, there was a time where you just like, you just went to the movies every weekend.
Yeah.
And you just found something to see, you know, that was kind of like the way I saw some horrible movies.
But in the spirit of the cord cutting discussion from last week, yeah, man. But then the streamers showed up and made it so much better.
Oh, the streamers are
awful. Fast forward 6 years, it's like, this is all garbage. No, what do we do? Well, the movie theaters are all closed.
Yeah.
The influencers and the tech people, the movie theaters are going to close and you'll be stuck with this dollar store dump of content.
Right, because even they're no,
we're
you're
doing it to ourselves, Mike.
I know, dude.
This is the show in a nutshell. We are destroying society and only pause to complain and not we pause to complain, Mike, and not contemplate. We gotta contemplate, not just complain. Yes. Thank you, Cornell. One last visit. Vinny, fuck off. You're not appearing this week.
There was even back in the day when I was like a kid. And I saw some of those terrible movies in the theater. Like, I still, there are some of them that I go, like, I look back on and I had fun in some of them were like bad. Like, I remember I saw Heart's War. Remember that movie?
I didn't mind Heart's War. I saw it on video. Dude, I was in law school when I rented that.
Yeah, but I was like,
I know.
Like,
it was a new release.
I remember going to the theater and my friend Jack and I went and we were like, I think.
Majeski?
No.
I know.
I was like, we thought it was going to be this like cool war movie because I think that's what the trailers were. And it was like a court. It was so bad for us at that time, but I saw some movies like Double Take. Remember that stupid movie with Eddie Griffin?
Oh, and, I never saw it. But yeah.
There was like a ton of those where it was just like, this sucks, but this is fun. You know, I'm 13, whatever.
Well, Van Damme, you just Segal used to go. Was my dumb 12 to 16 movies.
Right.
Movies. Right. Loved them.
But you used to just go like the Saturday night or Friday night, like you would just go to the movies and you'd just be like, what's playing? Oh, you know, Scary Movie 2 is playing. I'll go. I guess I'll see that. And you would just fucking go and you'd watch it. And then there were the Saturdays where you could like go in the daytime and bounce into like three different movies.
Mike,
you know,
this is old, but you know, Ben E. King of Stand By Me.
Yes, of course.
Well, he was in the Drifters, I believe, either the Platters or the Drifters.
I'm not sure.
Group. And they had a song, Saturday Night at the Movies.
Yeah.
Like, Saturday Night at the Movies.
Damn, you are old.
No, you know what this is, though? This is another thing. When you're getting driven by your mom to the movies as like an 11-year-old and she's got the oldie station, you get to immerse. This is why it's important, and we're never going to do this. This is just a lesson for historians.
Yeah.
this is why it's so good to interact with other people, other generations. And being in a car with your parents and they're listening to the oldie station, they're catchy songs.
They're great.
So you get like exposure to other things and you don't just go like Frankie Valli.
Yep.
Obviously that's kind of a let, but you hear so much good shit that you're like, oh, that's good. No wonder that's a hit that has lived on.
Right.
Instead of just going, you know, what bullshit rapper has collabed with Dua Lipa or Sabrina Carpenter for a 2-minute and 8-second song?
Yeah, it's tragic, dude. And it's seeped into sports. It's seeped into, like, I was watching, we've talked about this before with, who's that guy? The cowboy, the black guy, Shaboozy. And just how like terrible that music is. But it's just like every single like I was watching the football games this weekend, and it's like every single break is just some horrible song. Like it's a very depressing time to watch the and I was in my group chat, I was talking to my friends too. Because this is the other thing that's so weird to me, that the CBS and Fox and all the networks, they still have programming that is outside of sports that is just horrible. And the promos for them are so stupid that you're just sitting there and like Matt and I.
Majeski?
Yeah. We were just sitting there talking about this, and we were like, dude, like, is it us or is it just like every single thing I see? Commercials, promos for television shows on CBS and Fox and whatever, and even like the lead-ins to these football games, everything sucks. Like, how could that be possible? Where you just go hours without seeing something where you go like, I'd be interested in watching that for 30 minutes. It just doesn't even exist anymore. Like, how is that possible?
Like, I don't want to be like some serious dude, but like I mentioned last week, I think Say Nothing on Hulu. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But that, IRA like, I have here, John Keating, one of my favorite teachers at Dead Poets Society, my
alma mater,
my prep school. Yeah. He said when he was teaching the kids on the first day of poetry class or English class, and he goes, by science, math, these are the basic building blocks of life, but art, poetry, this is what we live for.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important, because as much as everybody wants to like bitch about humanities and act like you're a pussy if you don't, you know, if you're not an engineer or an MMA fighter, you're not contributing to society.
Yeah.
But there is something profoundly smart in that quote from that movie, which is when all our art, and I'm including myself in this because I've put out tremendous work, people. When art becomes algorithm based and every song becomes, I'm still convinced that Espresso by Sabrina Carpenter was put together by a computer program. And I mean that in a, it's catchy and she's cute and she's got this perfect combo of sexy, but am I okay? Yeah. Kind of like you are 25. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. But she's got like a, and that song is like, I don't even know why I like it. That's how deep, like, I'm just like, this is definitely, somebody has scientifically engineered a song like that to be like, yeah. Like Zoolander when Relax comes on and he tries to kill the Prime Minister of Malaysia. That's
obey
what
my dog.
Kill the Prime Minister of Malaysia. But I do think there is something deep here, which is like everybody, if we're just going to if we're just consuming this shit, that's why the Rangers have been so important to me. I believe this. I found something new and spontaneous and not algorithm driven.
Yes.
To dig into and to be like, I'm learning.
Sports
I'm
is like
excited.
The one thing that it, yes. like I can't be, basically.
And as much as I hate the fact that hot NHL players are like by design robots in interviews, I wish they could get a little bit of personality. But if I have to trade in a sport becoming about brand and influencing not fuck it, I'll take the deadpan, like,
yeah,
we played hard today.
Because, dude, like, I don't...
Over the alternative.
You're obviously a big basketball fan, as was I. This is the first year that in probably a decade, I just don't care about the NBA at all. Like, I have almost no interest in it. And it's kind of shocking to see that there's like
the Knicks competing.
No, well, and that's funny because I'm a Knicks fan.
Right.
And I'm just literally, the Knicks are like good. And I'm kind of just like, but I think part of it is there's some like basketball problems that I think that's a different conversation for a different episode. But I do think that a lot of it, man, is that there is you're seeing the generation gap in viewers of sports. Not in all sports, because in football, they don't let them get, you know, too much personality. But there is a generation gap now between...
Except the Vikings, apparently, who are doing, like, coordinated dances before they got knocked out in the playoffs.
Oh, they all do that now. But, like, this is, like... But at the end of the day, like, football is a very, like, military-based sort of game. Yeah. So there's, like, rank and file in a way. Whereas basketball is, like, the express-yourself sort of league. And I do think that there's something now where it's just, like, I do not identify with a kid that comes into this league at 20 and is, like, his own personal brand. I hate that, you know? Like, I don't think that... I mean, Michael Jordan was like that, and I guess Magic... Not really Larry Bird, but like Magic to a degree was kind of like that. But it wasn't the same fucking thing.
And I read that book, The Anxious Generation, which is all about cell phones and kids. And I really do think it's been a common theme throughout this show.
The phone.
The cell phone has destroyed us and we can't go back. And it's very sad because to me, Jordan was the first, was like an icon of basketball.
Yep.
And a brand, but it was done in this way of like, whoa, what's that? And Iverson comes in and does it differently, generates a new culture, his brand was not a marketing choice.
Right.
It was like the authenticity is what made himself. It. So, and people from a culture, it wasn't just black. It was like a hip hop culture centered kind of look and feel that people gravitated to. Also, I loved Iverson.
Right.
It wasn't like Iverson, but I liked it and it was authentic. And then something happens. LeBron came in. I think, thank God, he came in early.
Well, because he would have been insufferable if he would have come in at like the height, like now,
like 20.
Oh my God,
2021 rookie LeBron.
Because he is annoying now, and I love LeBron. Yeah. LeBron is basically my favorite player in the league forever. You know, but it was because there wasn't too much LeBron.
Right.
You know, now there is. It's just like everything is. And these guys, it's like every move they make is calculated for social. Like Jason Tatum to me is the one now where I look at and it's like every single thing that gets shown about like any move he makes that gets him praying before the game and like all this stuff with him and Kobe and whatever. To me, it is all calculated for social media.
Right.
And it's all calculated for the Bleacher Report highlights clip where they can meme it and go like, oh, Jason really said a prayer after he hit that shot for Kobe. And it's like every single move is like that. Whereas to your point with like Michael Jordan, it was just like you had the perfect player for the perfect PR machine with Nike and they just complimented each other.
Kind of.
Right.
Yeah, and I think Wembanyama, something not to get too deep into basketball specifically, but Wembanyama, I think it takes a special person to move beyond what we're normally doing, and I think he's the type of guy. He's such a freak.
Yeah.
The freakishness will be able to speak for itself,
which
is kind of cool. He won't have to be a...
But he also seems like a very smart guy. He seems like somebody that is like almost mature past, because he's got, what is he, 21?
He just turned 21.
Yeah, I mean, like he's young, man. Yeah. And it's just like, he doesn't seem that young. He seems very weathered. He seems very like ready to be a guy in the spotlight as opposed to some of these other guys that are that young. Because it's the only sport where guys go into the leagues as pros that young. There's hockey, no other sport. Hockey is a different thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, these guys, there's a whole culture now around like a look at me kind of culture. And it's, you know, basketball is the most social media of the sports.
I liked it. I don't mind. I actually don't mind. Like, I love Terrell Owens when he was in his prime. I don't.
Well, but again, that was awesome.
Right, right.
That was like wrestling.
I don't mind a look at me if it's really like look at me.
Right,
but he was like legitimate,
a legitimate narcissist. Right,
my brand. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, T.O.
was like a true psychopath.
But I love like perfect example of Terrell Owens. My favorite
he was
moment.
The best. He was
when
really
he
funny.
Ran with, and I was so resentful when they were like, is Ocho Cinco better at, no, not even close, actually.
Yeah.
Terrell Owens once took the pom-poms from a cheerleader.
Well, yeah, the popcorn.
He put the pop, he took the ball and put it in
the star, yeah.
And did this, and then Emmitt Smith did it, and then Terrell Owens went to do it again, and somebody not, and I said, none of these things I have a problem with.
Yeah.
Including the guy like barreling into him so he couldn't do it again. I was like, you talk the shit, you sometimes pay the, but. It might have been like, hey, this is actually good for my brand, but I didn't feel like it was like, we've market tested certain arrogant strategies and we decided this is the one. And now everything is a brand. And I know you're on this page, this isn't a MAGA, why can't they play the game the right way? It's that the shit feels so manicured and calculated because we are living social media first in the moment second.
Well, and then the other thing with T.O. specifically was not to go like too far into sports.
And
the
disgrace
like,
that he wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I completely support him not going to the – like he was third in touchdowns all time and or second in receptions all time.
Freak.
And he was a second ballot.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
Yeah. And but he was still of the era where like you could be a guy like that and be like a fucking head case, which he is and was, but also like, I mean, you know, when he played in that Super Bowl with the Eagles, he had a broken leg
9 weeks earlier. And then like he came back and caught 9 passes. I think,
I don't even think it was 9 weeks, dude. I think the leg was like
6 weeks or something.
The leg was like not fully recovered. And he like went out there and had like an awesome game. So it's like, He was still part. Iverson was like this too. Like Iverson had that like public image and it was like a brand or whatever. But like at the end of the day, like he was still a really tough guy who was really good.
Yeah.
Like and same thing with T.O. Like when you fucking need him to play in the Super Bowl, he plays with a broken leg and has 100-something receiving yards. Like that's the other aspect of this where it's like I don't know that there's as much public like. Dude, regular people like tough athletes. Like, then they don't like people that I think have these like curated brands. And I think brand curation is again another.
But are we speaking from a dying age where our fans under 25 completely enamored with the Devin Booker brand or the Jason Tatum brand or the whoever like. Are we looking at it through our perspective? And it's like, no, somebody, this has to be working or accomplishing something if there's such a commitment to kind of, you know, being about that. And that's not to say all these guys obviously put in tremendous amounts of time in the gym and all that.
But you know what, dude? I think there's an aspect. I told you how much wrestling I've been watching over the last, like, Attitude Era wrestling. And you know that whole thing where Stone Cold broke his neck? Mm-hmm. And then basically like finished the match and like won the match with a broken neck. Mm-hmm. I do think part of the thing that is lost now is the live atmosphere, because you can feel, even just watching it on television, you can feel the energy in the building when something like that happens. It's like an endearing thing to these people who are like, and you hear him talk about it. He was like, I know I broke my neck and I thought I might have been paralyzed, but there was
I broke my neck and thought I was paralyzed, but then I said, hell no. And I got up and I won the damn match.
Yes.
I get a hell yeah?
Thank you.
Didn't know if I'd ever get to use my Stone Cold before the show ended. Just in the nick of time.
And his whole thing was just like, there's a bunch of people that bought a ticket and I have to give them a show. And like, and
you think that's good. I go to a city, I say very few people bought tickets and I have to give them a show.
Right. But this is, we're doing more and more. We're doing less
broken
and less.
Broken neck is one thing. Broken spirit is a lot harder to perform with. And I do it every damn night. Could I get a hell yeah? I drank 2 ounces of this 12-ounce beer.
A lot of the beer mostly missed his mouth.
He's like the Cookie Monster of beer. Yeah. Like, where'd the cookie go?
Mostly on his chest. But like, dude, all right. So that stuff was like 97, 98, yep. You know? And things were still live. Events were live. We spent a lot of time around each other. And I think sports is sort of the last place where that exists, where you can kind of be there for, you know, a live event. And yeah. I do think, man, like, especially as stuff gets more and more expensive.
At dinner on Saturday night before seeing a movie, I saw, I was sitting in there was a table of like 12 people. And yeah. Two of the father was just sitting there watching the football game on his phone.
Yeah.
And I was just, I don't want to do this, but I really wanted to be like, sir, you're having a meal out with your kids. Could you please send the right message that sometimes other people's football games are not more important than family time?
Yeah, dude, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is anymore. And I do think that like
I want you to take your phone. I want you to open up your window and I want you to throw it out and say, I'm mad as hell and I hate my fucking cell phone.
I do think that's the answer, man. I'm deleting all my social media. I have no need for it anymore. I got to be honest.
Even Truth Social, Mike?
Oh, yeah. Well, that one I might keep. You know, I need to get my news somewhere, don't yeah. I? But I do think that's the major thing. It's like I just think we all got to make a bit of a push, myself included, to spend a little more time together.
Face-to-face, live events.
Yeah.
Human interaction, nature. These aren't my, but Nature Boy, combine several of them. Go see a Ric Flair show outdoors.
Absolutely.
You're getting like three of those things that I just mentioned. Woo!
Yeah.
And, but these are like the basic things we have to do and we're not doing them. But like, I do believe, as much as I've complained about society, and then we'll go to Comedy Talk for the yeah. last time, Mike.
Yeah.
As much as I've complained about different things in society, small and big, I think from a selfish perspective, but I think it's right. I think the John Keating quote is right. When we start to lose art, not as a profession, not as AI taking over, but when we lose what art means, that it's escape, that it's thought provoking, that it's examining things, that it's one person sharing a creation that didn't exist before they were here, and small or big, they share some of that with the world, whether it's five people in my case or a million people in someone else's case. When we start to lose that, we are giving up the, like, forget, and I'm sorry for all you factory workers out there, Mike. When you automate a factory, you may lose a job. That's not really, and you want to find new work for those people because work gives people purpose. I believe one great philosopher once said, work will set you free. Or was that what hung over the concentration camp? Anyway.
Oh, no.
Thank you. I thought you were going to get it right away. But but art, when we start giving up and automating and turning art into content, we're not going to have a purpose left. It's not the job. It's not what you put over the roof over the heads of your children or the way you take care of your parent. But like when we lose this thing and we've turned our content becomes what we make and not art, and that we don't care. We don't either support an artist or look for art or go experience things and events and art. We're fucked because we will lose the thing that gives us joy. I'm on guard for it now, but there are times where I'm just sitting on the couch. I'm like, why did I watch that series? Because somebody told me it was good and it didn't really interest me, but I felt like better watch it. And that's a real dangerous place we're in as a society. I think the phone is a disaster. I think social media is a disaster. And I think we're in jeopardy of really losing so much of what makes us human in the good way, in the fun way. Even porn to me, honestly, is like out of control.
Oh, of course.
And I'm just like,
I still watch it, but.
But to me, it's like, it's one of those things. And I've gotten made fun of. I said, I've paid for most of the porn I've ever consumed.
That's great.
And people say, that's stupid.
No, that's good.
And I go, I may not like the life choices they've made, but I respect that it's work.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to have a, you know, a weak moment 9 or 10 times a week, They've earned it.
A week.
In the porn, that was the joke. Thank you. In my porn, which literally does have blood, sweat, and tears, I wanna give them money for that.
Yeah.
And so and people will laugh. People laugh. And whenever I see one of these porn clips that pops up, and sometimes it'd be like, she had sex with 500 people. I'm like, disgusting whore. I don't watch it. I'm saying, like, literally the story of this woman had sex with 1,000 men in 12 hours. I go, for who? For what? Is that sex positive? That's sex insanity. There's no way to vouch for that as anything but like mental illness, as far as I'm concerned. Then you read the comments of all these men who clearly watch tons of porn. What do they say? I bet her parents are proud. And I want to sometimes sit, I wish we could have had, we always promise the people porn stars, right? We never deliver.
Yeah.
But what I would ask, not in a gotcha way, not in a shitty way, because I'd be like, you're beautiful. You've made business choices, not the ones I would make.
Yeah.
But do you ever think about the people you're producing this for? Now, you might have some normal fans, some dudes who aren't bad dudes or whatever. But do you ever wonder about all those guys who will watch your movie and then their instant reaction is fucking slut. Your dad must be fucking killing himself. Is that who you want to do art? I don't like to do art for half the people who claim to like what I do for the right reasons because they don't like it enough.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine being like, yes, I've opened my body up to these men for an hour of an intense filth fest.
Yep.
And my fans are like, I bet your parents are fucking proud, you whore. Ugh. And I'm sorry, like, I don't even know why the fuck I brought that up. It's just
it all in.
Paying for art, paying for work. But we get with porn, even we've gotten to this point where I think we're going to lose the like even guilty pleasures. That is now porn is a guilty pleasure. The idea of like seeing a bad movie is not a guilty. Porn is the OG guilty pleasure. But we're going to turn everything we like into content, into like the machine. Uh-huh. And then we're done. Like we're really done. We're going to have no way of finding purpose. We are increasingly secular, but we're also increasingly separating ourselves from the secular and the real. So when you give up spiritual pursuits and real tangible life pursuits, you're just a piece of shit on the internet. And I think we have to stop or else we're really going to be done.
Yeah.
So that's why the show's ending.
Yeah.
Perfect timing, actually. Yeah. I'm practicing. If Mike isn't leaving, I'm just practicing what I preach. So I appreciate a lot of you. Not all of you. I got to be honest. I definitely can't possibly appreciate all of you. But I appreciate most of you who've been listeners and viewers of this. You know, my Patreon is there for anybody who wants to keep getting a steady dose of JL. And, you know, and there's other ways to support and check out my albums, check out my special, please check out the Trump special, share it far and wide. But for the final time, we're going to take a break and we'll be back with the final comedy talk. Mike, don't you cry. We'll be back. And we're back, Mike. Was that a bittersweet break?
It was a bittersweet. Yeah, that's the word I would use.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm about to weave a bittersweet symphony.
Don't get sued. Last
comedy talk. I'm going to make this quick, but I have three specials I watched, and the reason they each represent something different. And my punchdown of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I want to credit most of my followers for just being punched down, like they've spirit punch downers. But I did capture this today when I posted my Trump special. I thought this was important.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really, it's not a punch down, like they didn't upgrade a joke, although I have plenty of those. But this person replied to me. I posted about my Trump special and said, hey, check out my Trump special. Yeah. And this person said, you're funny and talented, but his voice makes me sick. So I can't watch you anymore. Sorry.
His voice? Your voice.
You know, I'm good at doing the Trump impression, so she can't watch my material anymore. So, you know, it's just, it's the circle of life in my comedy career is do stuff that people love. They don't pay you for it. Keep doing the stuff they love. They stop loving it. They stop even watching it. And to this day, you ask people, hey, on Twitter, could you watch the YouTube video? Because those pay. If I had gotten the Twitter videos on YouTube, views on YouTube, I'd be like probably like $70,000 richer or $80,000 richer since, but they don't.
Yeah.
And that's free. Hey, could you click the mouse one more time and then I get paid? No, absolutely not. Okay. Thank you, fam. Now, the three specials I watched, one is Lonely Flower on Hulu, Roy Wood Jr. And the reason I wanted to talk about that, I love it. It's my favorite of his since Father Figure, I believe, was the one like 6 years ago or something that he did on Comedy Central that I thought was great. I thought his one after that was so.
Yeah.
This is back to that level, I thought, of Father Figure. I loved it. He's just a really funny guy, really likable, but it's like a thoughtful. He has these slight moments where you think he's going to just full on veer into the sentimental chunk. Mm-hmm. And then of course there's a funny line. And then it's unfortunate how comedy has molded me these days, where even somebody I respect and trust as a comedian, I still get anxious. Like, oh no. Don't do the 5 minute. Let's get real chunk. And then it's like, oh, thank God. I'm sorry for doubting you.
Yeah.
But I loved it on Hulu. Really good. It's Lonely Flower. I think it's Lonely Flower. It might be Lonely Flowers, plural, but Roy Wood Jr. Really good special on Hulu. The aforementioned, his name's Ben Frank. This is the guy I was on a show with in the Comedy Village. And I just gave him a pound and said, hey, good work. But, didn't linger on it. But I really liked his set. So I said, let me go watch his special. So it's called Let Me Be Frank. And I feel like if there's a regret I have comedically, it's that I'm out of the scene too much to be like maybe scouting or promoting with whatever limited reach I have, some good people who might need it. And his special is called Let Me Be Frank. And for the most part, it's really good. And he kind of looks like either a jacked Charlie Day. Mm-hmm. Do you know who this guy is?
No.
You don't know. Either a jacked Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, or like a better looking fit Screech. But Charlie, I think he and I would both go with the Charlie Day. It's just a better, it's more complimentary and living reference.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really good set. I was also jealous of the fact that his subscriber to viewer ratio was extremely good and mine sucks. Mm-hmm. And then the third one, because I think I reviewed his last special relatively early in this show, Ari Shaffir. America's Darling is his special. Now, Ari is interesting because he's done some very controversial things in his career. And he was like sort of one of the first, if not the first, kind of Rogan sidekick to explode. But I got to say, and even I was taken aback, his first special that I reviewed probably within the first 10 episodes of this show was called Jew. Mm-hmm. And it was very good timing because obviously it's a provocative title. And it came out like within like a week by coincidence of like some horrible anti-Semitic attack.
Oh God.
You know what I mean? Like a synagogue was bombed or something. Yeah, and it was like, here's my special Jew.
Yeah.
It was great. And he has many elements of him and in his past and the work he's done, including his Kobe comments that got his agent to dump him when he was like, a rapist is dead. Yay.
Yeah.
Like it was a very edgelordy.
Yeah.
Even if he would say like, I did mean it. But it was also very, you can mean it by putting it online. You're definitely going for that edgy. But his stand-up is really strong. And I think Jew was like bordering on a masterpiece, to be honest. I really thought it. I was just very impressed with how good that special was. But this special, America's Darling, has a lot of really good stuff. I don't think it's perfect. There's only one or two things that might be edgelordy, and he's kind of like in the moment, almost apologetic in like a humorous way. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason these three specials to me mean something, I thought it was a good way. Whether I was trying to rationalize a theme after the fact or actually came to this, Roy Wood Jr. was the first major person with a major following who retweeted my Trump video in 2020. He took it from 18,000 views to 40,000 views in like a few hours. And then it was off to the races. The next morning it was at 1 million. And I credit, he doesn't know this or anything, but like, just, it's like, he helped flip an algorithm switch that helped change my life, mostly for the worse, but monetarily for the better. Ari Shaffir to me is the kind of comic where even I can be predisposed to being, and I was on his podcast many years ago, and it was a great episode. I got a lot of compliments until an ex-girlfriend threatened to sue me for some of the things I said. I didn't include names, but it was deeply personal stuff. She's the worst person I've ever met in my life. So I didn't really like, she's lucky it happened when I still gave a fuck. Like right now, if that happened again, I'd be like, sue.
Yeah.
Get it all out there. Get it all out in public. Sue me. I'd be doing a parody of Belle Biv DeVoe. Sue me, baby. Sue me. And, but he actually deleted the episode for me. He always gave me a little bit of an edgelordy vibe, but he really is a strong comedian. And that's just to tell people, don't always judge. So I'm thankful to Roy Wood and he's a great comic, but with Ari Shaffir, it's sort of like, don't always judge a comedian because they necessarily don't hang with the right people, the people you like. Yes, you can judge people sometimes by the company they keep, but you can't always judge a comedian. You can't always judge their comedy by the people they keep. And I think he's a good example of people who might be like, he's a Rogan guy, he's a this guy. I mean, he's had back-to-back really strong specials. And, you know, that's, if you don't watch his, just take that as maybe a bit of comedy opinion and wisdom from me. And then the third one, this guy, Ben Frank, this, I think, young comedian, young-ish, he's in his early 30s, I think. But, you know, don't make the same mistake so many people made with me. If you like comedy, don't just fucking absorb what's being shoved down. Maybe do a little exploration. Sometimes I literally just scroll. And obviously YouTube is showing me things, but I looked this guy up. I saw him at a show. I like to do the things that I would hope people would do for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I put it out into the universe. Does it ever come back? Absolutely not, Mike. But I like to think I'm still an optimist or else I wouldn't even be doing anything comedic still.
Yeah.
But I watched his special to sort of be like, I'm not going to make this guy's career. I'm not going to do anything for this guy. But it's like, if you liked the guy's work, if you thought he had a good set, be curious. Dig into their stuff. If his special sucked, I'm like, he's got work to do. But it was a pretty good special. And I think that's just what, if I had any, since this is the comedy talk, I think if I had any advice for people with comedy, you know, support good people who are funny, like Roy Wood. Support funny people, even if maybe you think Rogan sucks. That doesn't mean the people who that doesn't mean the comedy that surrounds him is bad. Brian Simpson, for Christ's sakes, is like a Rogan opener sometimes, and he was one of my top three specials of last year. And yeah, if you go to a show and you see an MC or you see a feature, don't make them rely on the gods of TikTok or Instagram. You do the work. If you think somebody's funny, get their business card at a club. Like that opener, hey, that was funny stuff. What's your name? You have a card? They'll have a card or they'll have something. And you might discover somebody good. And most of us are not going to be big successes. Most of us are not going to have our dreams come true. I certainly know that. But watch art, watch comedy, listen to comedy, find comedy. Because the truth is, any decent comedian, they may want success, but they want somebody to listen to their shit and laugh. And you can't do that if you never look it up. So algorithms can feed you all sorts of stuff, but once in a while, just try to discover something new. We like to do that with lots of things. I know this restaurant. I know sometimes do it with comedy because art is going bye-bye and only you can prevent forest fires. So on that note, Mike, thank you so much for all the work that you've done. I clearly didn't deserve it, but I'm appreciative nonetheless. I'm a results-oriented guy, and we just didn't get the results.
We did a great show.
Fans, I really do appreciate you. Not followers. You know who they are. They're the 190,000 people who don't do shit. But you, you commented, you listened, you reviewed, you maybe bought tickets, you maybe gave something, joined Patreon, whatever it is, I thank you. And the one last thing I'm going to say, Mike, is I have a special on Amazon Prime called Half Blackface, people. Can you please watch it and give it a 5-star review? Are you kidding me? This podcast is dying in a tribute, in lieu of flowers at the funeral service. Go to Amazon Prime, watch it, tell a friend to watch it and give it a 5-star review. I will be checking. Don't make me drag Mike into like some special dark web episode where iHeartRadio can't find it.
Definitely don't do that.
So don't do that. Thank you. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I will not see you next Thursday.